Live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration. Historically speaking, the markets have performed better when there is divided government. The biggest pressure for fiscal stimulus is an uptick in cases.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country. State governments control elections. That's in the Constitution.
I think that we can expect a smooth, thoughtful, methodical transition.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
President-elect Joe Biden starts talking national security. This as President Trump withdraws troops from the Middle East. And breaking news, red headline crossing the Bloomberg terminal, Judy Shelton's nomination to the Federal Reserve blocked in the Senate. We're going to have the latest on Shelton's Fed nomination blocked in a blow to President Trump, as well as Leader McConnell. We're going to get to that breaking news coming up. But we begin tonight with the latest developments from the President-elect's transition team. President-elect Joe Biden, speaking today earlier at a national security briefing in Wilmington, Delaware, and he said that he has global ambitions to return America to the world stage over the next 4 years. Here he is.
We've been through a lot of damage done the last 4 years, in my view, and we need to rebuild our institutions and our workforce to reflect the full strength and diversity of our country.
While President-elect Joe Biden was updating reporters and the public on his national security plans, President Trump announced that he is reducing the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan and Iraq almost in half. Take a listen to what he had to say earlier.
By January 15th, 2021, our forces, their size in Afghanistan, will be 2,500 troops. Our force size in Iraq will also be 2,500 by that same date.
That was the acting defense secretary, Chris Miller, speaking about President Trump's plans. And all of that happens as Fed Chair Jay Powell took part in a moderated discussion at the Bay Area Council Business Hall of Fame Award ceremony earlier today, discussing the state of the economy.
Questions of financial sustainability arise. Can we afford these deficits and that kind of thing? And those are issues we're going to need to return to as a country. We won't have a choice. Ultimately, we will return to those issues. They're not issues that I would prioritize now. The time to be focusing on fiscal sustainability is when unemployment is low, when the economy is growing, when taxes are rolling in. And that's the time to really focus is during the healthy part of the business cycle, not when the unemployment rate is high and millions of people are out of work.
So that's the state of affairs, a geopolitical day while the Fed chairman continues to discuss concerns about the economy. Josh Wingrove is first up. He is Bloomberg White House reporter. Josh, let's begin with the geopolitics, obviously with the economy in the background. But you've got the president announcing significant troop withdrawals as the president-elect is discussing national security. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an open question as to whether Biden will reverse some of these, in particular in Afghanistan, you know, going down 4,500 to 2,500, and that's well down from the numbers that we saw, you know, under the Obama administration, for instance. Trump just, you know, doesn't believe in these kind of conflicts. He doesn't think it's America's problem. Of course, the risk here is that leaving could create a power vacuum, potentially, you know, open the door to extremists. Groups or hardliners, you know, domestic governments of a more hardline faction. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, you know, Biden has this sort of America's back mantra, you know, is sort of raises the prospect of him rejoining the WHO, WTO, this kind of thing. But I think that the pretty clear contrast today speaks to the broader divide between these two guys. Trump is not all that interested in things beyond America's borders.
So as this continues to intensify, what are your sources saying at the White House, Josh, in terms of whether or not there is a divide with regards to whether or not the president should be making these types of decisions in the final weeks of his administration?
Well, I don't think they would see it as much of a divide. You know, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien spoke to the press today briefly. I'd note he did not take questions, but he did speak and he said, look, the president's been doing this for a long time. And that's true. I think they would push back on the notion if Democrats make it as some sort of, you know, jarring sprint to, you know, January to sort of clear off the decks and pursue it. They have been pushing to bring these numbers down for a while. Trump has announced that he wanted to do it. So I think that they would, you know, just say, look, we're just continuing on the path we were on. Now, a lot of this stuff might get undone. I think that's the backdrop here, right? The problem for Joe Biden, of course, is it doesn't look like he's going to have the Senate. Donald Trump hasn't had the House for 2 years, and so a lot of the stuff that Trump is doing is, in effect, unilateral and can be undone by Joe Biden pretty quickly if he wants to. But so far, it's a little unclear as to what Biden will do. You know, Biden's folks are in touch with a lot of the folks in Canada, and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. There's sort of a lot of overlap. They share notes a lot. Trudeau ran on the same mantra, Canada is back, he said when he took power back there. I used to cover him. He ended up doing virtually nothing different on the international stage. So it's absolutely possible that it ends up similarly as just a slogan for Biden, something to make his base feel good about themselves, but doesn't actually translate to a whole lot of change internationally.
Well, in terms of the geopolitical developments, though, I mean, it is fascinating. Josh Wingrove is with us. He is Bloomberg White House reporter. It is fascinating because we in the United States, we always, you know, anticipate that whomever Americans elect to be the president and their administration, that the world will react. We oftentimes forget that the world and our adversaries are carrying out and concocting plans of their own without, and to some degree, our knowledge. And so the developments of having a sitting president remove troops and then on the, you know, in the same time period, having the president-elect talking about national security, just a remarkable, remarkable 24 hours just on the geopolitical stance. Meanwhile, Fed Chair Jay Powell, we played a bit earlier, speaking today about what he views is the virus continuing to wreak havoc in terms of millions of Americans who remain unemployed. What are you hearing from your sources about whether or not there are going to be a serious, serious fiscal stimulus negotiations between Speaker Pelosi and the White House, the outgoing White House?
Well, in the White House or in McConnell? I think there's a reporting that suggests that Trump has basically punted it to the majority leader, to McConnell. There is not a lot of talk coming from the White House. There's not a lot of talk coming from Trump himself. Of course, he hasn't taken questions from reporters in quite some time now. So he just seems to not be placing any priority on this at all. Of course, the virus is getting worse across the country. The numbers we're seeing are just shocking. Yesterday was the second highest number of cases on record, second only to a few days earlier. So this is, the need will continue to be there. It looks like it'll probably even grow. Governors are taking steps to restrict it. But if anything's going to happen, it's going to be between McConnell and Pelosi. And frankly, there just is not a lot of sign of any movement right now. They remain at loggerheads on how big this should be.
And just to have the virus update from my Bloomberg terminal, New York City's COVID-19 positive test rate over a 7-day period stayed below a threshold that would trigger a shutdown of schools. Meanwhile, New Jersey saying that its intensive care unit bed use has quadrupled over the past 6 weeks, and groups representing U.S. doctors, nurses, and hospitals urging President Trump to share information about the administration's coronavirus response with President-elect Joe Biden's transition team. Any word on that front? Are they coordinating on COVID-19 information?
No, not at all. But Alex Azar told Bloomberg earlier today in a radio interview that the health secretary, of course, that he doesn't think it makes that much of a difference. He says it's a lot of career staff at CDC, DOD, that are handling this. But as you allude to this statement from the hospitals and doctors saying, look, Biden should get a look under the hood now to make sure that the ball doesn't get dropped on the virus response. But, you know, in the meantime, Biden can pretty much only beg people to wear a mask. We haven't really seen that. The other thing that he's been silent on, which Trump is also silent on, is what Americans should do about Thanksgiving. Pretty much every health expert out there thinks that Thanksgiving is going to pour fuel on the fire of this pandemic. But both Biden and Trump are being pretty quiet, not wanting to sort of take the step of asking Americans to skip the dinner.
All right, Josh. Thanks so much for breaking all of that down for us. That's Josh Wingrove. He is the Bloomberg White House reporter for us. And coming up, we're going to pivot to the economy and check in with what happened in the markets today. Lindsey Graham, we're going to check in with one of our economists over, a senior managing director at BDA Partners, Inc., for that update. You can download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find me on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. I'm grateful to be here. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg TV and radio, and you're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. Stocks ease off record highs with virus in focus. Claire Ballantyne reporting on the Bloomberg Terminal. Stocks pulled back from record highs as investor focus turned to the surge in virus cases and new lockdown measures, overshadowing optimism that COVID-19 vaccines will eventually end the pandemic. Pharmacy chains were among the worst performers on the S&P 500 index after Amazon unveiled a new push into prescription drugs. Tom Keene was all over that this morning. Tesla jumped on news that the carmaker will join the benchmark U.S. gauge, and Treasury yields dipped along with the dollar as Federal Reserve Chairman Jay Powell said the U.S. economy still has a long way to go before it fully recovers from the pandemic. Take a listen to the Fed chairman speaking at a conference earlier today.
Questions of financial sustainability arise. Can we afford these deficits and that kind of thing? And those are issues we're going to need to return to as a country. We won't have a choice. Ultimately, we will return to those issues. They're not issues that I would prioritize now. The time to be focusing on fiscal sustainability is when unemployment is low, when the economy is growing, when taxes are rolling in. And that's the time to really focus is during the healthy part of the business cycle, not when the unemployment rate is high and millions of people are out of work.
Ewan Relly is a senior managing director at BDA Partners. Thank you so much, Ewan, for joining us. I mean, you hear that dynamic in terms of what happened in the markets as well as what the Fed chairman is saying. What will it take to provide some more of that certainty if it can't be the immediacy of a vaccine?
Look, I think Kevin, thanks for having me.
Anytime.
There are a number of different conflicting signals in the market. I think people are terrified on Wall Street about very soft retail environment. Obviously, COVID, the economy looked like it may have been starting to weaken even before this recent spike in COVID. And, the irony is that we've got vaccines potentially tantalizingly close, but not close enough.
So as you hear that from the Fed chairman, which essentially is, okay, I mean, he's been very consistent in terms of trying to urge the folks in where I am in Washington, D.C., to get to some type of fiscal stimulus deal. And yet I'm ready to pull my hair out. And I'm going to put this question coming up to Congressman French Hill in the next hour, Republican from Arkansas,
Sure. Because
I don't think they're still a world apart. Ewan, and you know this better than anybody, but they're a world apart in terms of getting to some type of skinny fiscal deal.
Yes. Look, I think, unfortunately, it's a great indictment of the current political environment. Politics has trumped everything else. And actually, both parties know very well what needs to be done. And I think for various reasons, everybody is holding off coming to the middle and compromising. And sadly, as I say, we've fallen victim as a country to a febrile and very unhealthy political environment.
So as all of that goes on, this optimism in the public, this public optimism, Ewan, about the COVID shots barreling toward the finish line in 300-day science feat. I mean, you've got, whether it's Moderna or Pfizer, I mean, some really positive news. We could even see some images of certain frontline personnel getting the vaccine by the end of the year and then getting a vaccination push in the first quarter of next year. But when you dissect that through a market lens, will that be enough or will it be just too gradual?
I think the market is going to be, the market is bouncing upwards every time there's good news about vaccines. The market wants to believe that there's a future beyond COVID, and fundamentally there are some very healthy signs in the economy, including robust mergers and acquisitions activity. I think the market's comfortable with a moderate, divided government led by Biden. So the market wants to believe, and that's why the stock markets have held up reasonably well. But candidly, there's you know, every time we think we're through it, there's another reason to feel nervous. And this week, it's really, you know, what feels like out of control COVID numbers, not only in the U.S. but actually globally at the moment. Combine that with some lingering political uncertainty about the presidential election, and you know, you can make a bearish case just as good as you can make a bullish case today.
All right, let's talk about President-elect Joe Biden in terms of the geopolitical economic team that he is putting together. We all know the names on the President-elect shortlist for Treasury Secretary, but what will markets be looking for, as the President-elect's transition team continues onward in the weeks ahead?
Sure. Look, I think Janet Yellen would be fine. You know, I think, again, people in the markets were concerned about whether Biden might be held hostage by the progressive wing of the Democrats, and that doesn't seem to be the case so far. In fact, what we're hearing today is the converse. The Justice Democrats, the left-wing Democrats, the Squad, AOC, and all those guys are jumping up and down because Biden is putting in place rather centrist, moderate, long-time loyalists, as best we can tell. So again, I think Biden sees himself as reassuringly boring. That's what the markets want. And you know, after the year we've had, boring is fantastic news.
So it really is remarkable because you mentioned former Fed Chairwoman Janet Yellen. Of course, there's a host of different other names, and I was speaking with some folks over the past couple of days who are involved in that Treasury transition and the conversations going on there. And you know, I would, that meshes with my reporting, which is essentially he's not surrounding himself, President-elect Joe Biden, I don't want to say who he's. It's much more akin to the Obama years. It doesn't appear to be a radical departure in terms of the economic brain, so to speak, of the administration, the incoming administration. It doesn't appear to be too much of a departure in those circles from the Obama years. Does that mesh with what you're hearing?
Yes, we're hearing the same things. And actually, again, after a fairly volatile couple of years, and particularly this year where both parties have been at each other with daggers, you know, anything in the middle is reassuring. And you talk about going back to the Obama years, that may literally be the case. You know, Biden is putting in place, as his chief of staff, deputy chief of staff, many people who've been with him for years and years. And so, you know, people with experience, the opposite. It feels like Biden is consciously pushing back against the behavior of the Trump administration, which has been to put mavericks and outsiders in power wherever possible.
Exactly. What I want to get your take on. Oh, this breaking news, the red headline on my Bloomberg terminal. I don't know if you saw this, but Shelton's Fed nomination blocked. Judy Shelton's nomination to the Federal Reserve Board was blocked in the Senate earlier, just a couple of hours ago. A stunning defeat for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and a blow to outgoing President Donald Trump's drive to reshape the U.S. central bank before he leaves office. Your reaction? In like a minute.
We've known Shelton was, you know, being lined up for 6 or 9 months. Very controversial and unconventional pick. Again, a classic Trump pick. Deliberately an outsider. Self-described, she said, "I am not in the mainstream of economists." Well, we're not talking about, you know, shaking up the swamp here. We're talking about the Federal Reserve, and the market absolutely needs to see consistency, normalcy in the Federal Reserve. Mitch McConnell, whatever your opinions of him, we know that he's got a very, very strong track record of getting through the people that he wants. He's fallen short on this occasion. We hear there may be a vote again later this week, but we also know that, you know, several Republicans are quite nervous about this pick of Shelton.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, even Republicans are nervous about it, and there's some suggestion.
Yeah, we got to leave it there. We got to leave it there. Thank you so much, Ewan Relly. Much more coming up next. This is Bloomberg 99.1.
Live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration. Historically speaking, the markets have performed better when there is divided government. The biggest pressure for fiscal stimulus is an uptick in cases.
Bloomberg Sound On. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country. State governments control elections. That's in the Constitution.
I think that we can expect a smooth, thoughtful, methodical transition.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
The race to flatten the curve again. This has hospitalizations soaring and states now imposing new restrictions. President-elect Joe Biden briefs reporters on his national security plans. Top of the list, beating the virus. This, as President Trump continues to move forward with troop withdrawals from the Middle East. All of that, plus my colleague's exclusive interview with Health Secretary Azar. Are they providing data to the president-elect on the transition team? A lot to get through. It's good to be back, and what a busy news day, folks, because we've got a lot to get through. We begin tonight with the big story. New York City COVID-19 positive test rate over a seven-day period stayed below a threshold that would trigger a shutdown of schools. This, of course, as states around the country are having to shut down schools, cities, of course, working with their local officials as cases continue to surge. Case in point, New Jersey. They said that their intensive care unit bed use has quadrupled over the last 6 weeks. All of this comes as President-elect Joe Biden briefed reporters today on his national security briefing in Wilmington, Delaware. Take a listen to what he had to say.
We've been through a lot of damage done the last 4 years, in my view, and we need to rebuild our institutions and our workforce to reflect the full strength and diversity of our country.
Meanwhile, groups representing U.S. doctors, nurses, and hospitals urged President Trump to share information about the administration's coronavirus response with President-elect Biden's transition team. HHS Secretary Alex Azar spoke on Bloomberg Balance of Power earlier today about those urgings. Take a listen to what he said.
The distribution planning is being done by career officials at CDC, on Operation Warp Speed at the Defense Department. These are people whose roles don't change. They're working with our states. It's a transparent back and forth. These documents and materials are very transparent. And then the information with the drug manufacturers, actually that type of data goes into the FDA and is, of course, commercial confidential and can only always ever be shared with a very limited number of people, with even at FDA for consideration. So I don't think anything is at risk from potential government transitions.
So he says nothing is at risk, but still no formal briefings between the president-elect and the outgoing administration on the coronavirus. Louis Miranda is a former DNC communications director and director of communications and politics at Alloy. And former Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Renacci returns as well. Congressman, I got to start with you here. Just in terms of from a showing of American confidence, is it wise for the outgoing president to not have his staff brief the team who's going to be responsible for really getting up and running many of the plans for this widespread vaccination?
Well, look, Kevin, and thank you for having me on. One of the reasons why we do not, inaugurate a new president until January is because there is votes that have to be counted. There is certification that has to be done by the state, which is happening and which is moving forward. And then at the same time, there always needs to be a continuation of power or a peaceful transition of power. And I don't think none of that's being halted. And as you heard Azar say, that their information is being passed on. The question is, are they sitting down together yet? Are they moving forward together yet? I think much of that is getting done. I think,
but they're not. I have to press you on this, Congressman. And I'm so grateful that you're back on the show. But there is no meeting between the president-elect's transition team and the outgoing administration's. His point is that career bureaucrats are doing it. But is it uncommon?
That's exactly what I meant.
Isn't it uncommon? I mean, this is a war against a virus that has caused hundreds of thousands of deaths and has shut down Main Street to Wall Street in many regards. People have lost their jobs, their lives, and they're not even sitting down together. I mean, is that wise?
Well, again, what I said was you hit the nail on the head. Career administrative people are working together, are talking about what's going on. There is a transitional time that will occur. But that's why the inauguration isn't until January. And we're only, 10 days in. What was the election? November 3rd. So we're 14 days in, 13 days in. People get excited, but there is another process going on, which is let's just make sure we certify the vote count and move forward. So all of this can be done. And I don't think in the past, I don't think we've had elections this close. I don't think we've had states this close. So I think there's a whole bunch of difference. And don't tell me 2000 similar, because 2000 was just one state and it was Florida.
Congressman, I'm just a little bit confused as to why we're going to talk about the runoffs, but this segment we're focusing on the virus. Louis Miranda, let's stay focused on this, please, because this is incredibly important, because all around the country, whether it's in Maryland or right here in the nation's capital, businesses are concerned that they're going to have to shut down or that they're going to have to, kids are going to have to stay home from school. Same question to you. What can the president-elect do to make sure that the outgoing administration is going to be briefing the individuals who are going to have to enact many of the supply chain vaccinations, whether it's Pfizer, whether it's Moderna, Lewis? What can they do to work together? I mean, this is Americans, not Democrats and Republicans.
Well, I think the president-elect has to do what he's been doing, which is to move forward where he can. He just had a meeting this week with business leaders from a variety of industries from across the country to be able to set a lot of these things in motion that need to be done in terms of keeping our economy moving forward and figuring out how we deal with things like the coronavirus and protecting jobs and all of the things that you can do in terms of just engaging the public. At the end of the day, the legacy of Donald Trump will have been that he politicized something as simple and basic as mask wearing, which continues to roil our economy and make it hard to get this virus under control, and now refuses to let his team move forward with a transition that, if you look at security briefings, even during the 2000 contested recount, Bill Clinton allowed George W. Bush security briefings, right? And that's an example of what we need to do when we actually put country above political party. I think that as much as the president-elect can do, though, the real question here is, the Republicans in the Senate and in Congress who start to turn on this ridiculousness because, the President Trump's legal cases continue to fall by the wayside. He's having trouble in reshuffling his legal team. You see an increasing number of Republicans like Roger Wicker trying to move forward. And that's what's going to have to happen.
All right. And meanwhile, just to stick with the economy, Home Depot, the Atlanta-based home improvement retailer, reported quarterly sales that surpassed analysts' expectations as consumers keep shifting spending to household renovation projects. This comes as U.S. retail sales rise at the slowest pace in 6 months. Much more coming up with the panel, Lewis, as well as Jim. And remember, you can download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find me on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
More bipartisan observers when it comes to counting the votes. If we're going to use more mail-in balloting, we need to have signature verification.
That was Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham of South Carolina speaking to reporters earlier today in the halls of Congress discussing his concerns about the counting of mail-in votes in Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia. Meanwhile, Congressman Brendan Boyle, Democrat from Pennsylvania, spoke earlier today with my colleagues Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz on Bloomberg Surveillance. Take a listen to what he had to say.
let's be clear. Joe Biden at this point has won 5 million more votes. He's up by about 4 percentage points and 306 electoral college votes. Even if somehow magically the results changed in a couple states, even if it changed in 3 states, Joe Biden would still be the president-elect of the United States. What it does show, though, is I'm actually not surprised. I mean, Donald Trump has thought every election of the last decade was fixed, including 2016, the election he won. So actually, it would have been a surprise had he conceded and just admitted that this election was legitimate.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to analytically have this conversation, folks. We are not going to delve into, I don't even know, the spasms of Washington, D.C. debates. And I'm very grateful because I know Jim Renacci, former congressman, Republican congressman from Ohio. I know he has it in him. And I know Louis Miranda, former DNC comms director, can as well. So I know you both are on two very opposing sides of the aisle in terms of that. We just heard from Chairman Graham and Congressman Boyle. That's where they are. But Congressman, purely from a political strategist perspective, this is all about Georgia. This is all about making sure that the Trump base remains within the party, correct? Talk about it from an analytical perspective, please.
Well, look, I think this is all about making sure elections and votes are counted across the country. I am part of the National Council on Election Integrity, 38 bipartisan members of Congress, the House, the Senate, and military leaders who believe that every vote should be counted and the process should occur. And I think what we have found is that we have weaknesses in our election processes. And one of the things we have found is in Georgia and other states, votes haven't been counted. So in the end, I think not only for this election, but every election in the future, we have to make sure that all votes are counted, number one. Number two, that all legal votes and all those votes that should be counted based on state legislature. That's the other thing. When you talk about a legal vote, it should be based on that. That's who has the authority under the Constitution. And it's not just about this one as much as it's about all the ones in the future. I don't care whether it's a Democrat, Republican, who's running. We've got to make sure the votes are counted. We've got to make sure the process in every state is accurate. And we've got to make sure in the end there's a certifiable election that everyone understands is can be supported, and we have peaceful transitions.
Okay, but where I hear what you're saying, I guess I spoke with a source today on connected to the president's reelection campaign, and even this source is saying there isn't a coherent legal strategy, and so it's. Difficult, I think, to hear just accusations without facts. So from that perspective, I want to press you on this because it would appear, based upon every interview on background and on the record that I've done, that what they're saying is this is more about politics. There was a bipartisan bill that passed just in July just the other month, the Election Security of 2019, the Election Security Act of 2019, that bolstered security. The president's own intelligence community has come out and said that there wasn't a major hacking and that in many ways this was a very successful election security election. So I guess what I'm asking is, where are the goods? Everyone's making these accusations, but Jim Renacci, where are the goods?
Well, look, I didn't say there were goods. I said that
I got to press you on this.
Wait a minute.
You're not going to give the goods and you're just going to say that the election was fraudulent, that's problematic.
And Kevin, I didn't say that. I said there's a process and we got to follow the process. One of the reasons Washington is broken is nobody wants to follow the process. We have a divided government, and nobody follows the process. And I can go time and time again to tell you there are processes. Let's work through the processes. And in the end, there is a process that they're following. The president has the right to do whatever is necessary to contest, up to a point to where the elections are certified. That's the process. And every state certifies them. And then when the states certify them, there will be a count of Electoral College votes, not popular votes, because we all know that if California, if you take all the votes in California, absolutely the Democrats are always going to win. That's why we have an Electoral College. So let's follow the process and let's let the process work through. If we do that, we will be so much better off in this country. And the process eliminates the arguments between Democrats and Republicans.
And I think where it falls apart, Kevin, is that the president has done nothing but try to undermine the process. I mean, let's keep in mind that the reason that we didn't have results sooner in states like Pennsylvania is because the Republican state legislature didn't allow them to start counting them in advance, because what they wanted was to be able to show the president leading on day of election votes and then to challenge ballots. And I think the news that Lindsey Graham was on the phone with the Republican Secretary of State threatening and basically suggesting that he should throw out some ballots to try to skew things is incredibly problematic. And one of the things that you and I have talked about a lot, Kevin, when I've come on the space, is the reality that the instability that Donald Trump creates is bad for our democracy, it's bad for our economy, and it creates so much damage. And I think that's what's happening right now, is that whether it's the delays in the security issues, the last-minute things he wants to try to get done, almost out of spite, whether it's this news that came out that he's threatening to attack Iran or was looking for options. Like,
yeah,
you know, don't be surprised when you see retaliations and all that. Like, the reality is that there's a process that he hasn't respected. And the process as unfolding.
So we didn't do what I wanted, which was to talk analytically. But, you know, I just go back to growing up in Delco. And my dad would always say, Kev, if you've got the goods, you show the goods. You don't hide the goods, you show the goods. Where are the goods? Where are the goods? We're talking about the goods. Where are the goods? I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I'm Kevin Cirilli. Welcome back. I'm back. I'm the Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. My next guest, you know, I'm so grateful he's on. Congressman Frenchio, Republican from Arkansas. Congressman, have you watched The Crown, the new episode of The Crown?
I've seen the first episode of the new season, and I love Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to what happens to Prince Charles next. But I have not binged.
You know, I'm trying this thing. I can't stay away. I don't know how people do the binge watching thing. I'm like, first of all, because what I end up doing is I fast forward through the characters that I don't like. So I went through Friday Night Lights once, which is a great book by the Buzz Bissinger, Philly guy. And but so I watched that, and all of the players that I didn't like, I just fast forwarded through because I binged. So after that, I thought, you know, Kev, maybe just take your time. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And just watch an episode a night, you know, and make your way through it. So I will tell you, I'm a little bit more ahead of you. This season's nuts. Who knew the Brits had it in them? They're a wild bunch, Congressman.
It's a Randy group over there, baby.
All right. Speaking of a Randy group, are you guys going to get to a deal on the fiscal stimulus? What's going on in the lame duck?
Well, I know that the Trump administration and members on both sides of Capitol Hill want a common sense, straightforward COVID relief package that's been blocked by the overambitious spending requirements and non-pandemic requirements of Speaker Pelosi. I hope she's a little chastened from her losses this fall, and maybe we can get a deal. I hope that Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi can strike a common sense deal that President Trump will sign. And look, we've talked about it. Extend the PPP, make the forgiveness easier. Secretary Mnuchin says he supports that. Let's fix this pandemic unemployment amount and for how long. Let's fix that, and let's get our governors the ability to spend this CARES Act money past 12/31 of this year, and they'll make better decisions with taxpayer money unless they're rushing to cram CARES Act spending before the end of the year.
Congressman, I had Monday off, okay, and I had Friday off, and I I talk to people back home, you know this, Congressman, and people are frustrated. You know, they're angry. They're sick of the virus. They're sick of Washington. They're frustrated at all of the dysfunction. They almost want to turn it off. Okay, and you've got cases soaring, hospitalization skyrocketing, and then just to say it's dysfunctional is an understatement. I mean, it makes an Irish Italian family look like the Brady Bunch. I'm serious. And so I say it respectfully, but here we are in a transitional period in Washington, D.C. Are you and your colleagues on both sides of the aisle? I know you, but do people understand that people are fed up with the politics of polarization?
100%. And I think that's what you saw in the vote on November. You saw equal votes, basically, for these presidential candidates, meaning the country really is a center-right country. It's not for this far-left progressive checklist that the speaker's been dealing with the last couple of years. You see the House majority of the Democrats narrow significantly, perhaps 5 or 6 seats. And then, of course, the Senate races we know about. So I think that says that, and my view is this for the 117th Congress. If Joe Biden's president of the United States with a Republican Senate and a tiny Democratic majority in the House, that is a recipe for compromise on some big issues and getting some things done.
And he said that. He said he has a mandate to cooperate. That's what he believes the mandate is. I mean, for him to say that, I think, is a huge sign that this is not going to be, you know, AOC's cabinet.
Yeah. Well, I think we got to see how he crafts those potential cabinet members as he thinks through his transition. I think it's very important that the Republicans, in my view, of course, I'm a partisan, win one or both of those Senate seats in Georgia. That sets up perhaps an era of good feelings going into the first few months of the next administration.
Let me ask you this, and I want to go geopolitical for a second, because your district in particular in Arkansas is so impacted by the various trade by the geopolitics and the politics of trade in particular, especially as it relates to Mexico, Canada, and even to some extent China. What are you going to be looking for in terms of how the Biden administration deals geopolitically with these issues?
Let me talk Middle East first. I don't think that a President Biden can go back to the future with the Iranian deal. The Iranians have broken the John Kerry, Barack Obama Iranian nuclear deal. They've broken it. People have moved on past it. And it's because of President Trump backing out of it, working with European allies to look at it differently, that you're seeing this new era of peace breaking out between Sunni Arab countries and Israel. This is a major change that people have worked for 30 years. I think the Biden administration will want to continue that. So that means that any talks with the Iranians will have to start fresh and take a different approach. In China, I think there's bipartisan support in Congress on both sides of the Capitol for thinking new about China. This was a lasting contribution of President Trump's term, is making us all think through diplomatic, military, technology, trade arrangements with China. I think you'll see the Biden administration continuing down that path.
It's going to be fascinating. And earlier today, Joe Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. We should note that as well. And okay, here we are. Here we are. You've been someone who has served in the Bush administration, you're a congressman, you've worked in the private sector. From your vantage point now, and you know this, and I don't want to get too far ahead of anyone and whatnot, but I talked to a lot of Republicans who are feeling very bullish on 2022, and they're feeling very skeptical about the national debt. You, of course, are someone who knows that very well in terms of having worked in the budget office for Bush. You know, put that in perspective. Square that circle. Can we square that circle? Because I would say, based upon the conversations I have, Congressman, that I do think once Joe Biden's in office, that there is going to be another massive, massive spending bill. And then folks like yourself and your friends and your camp are gonna really be speaking up. But that could fuel a lot of the next 2 to 4 year cycle.
No doubt. I mean, I think we have to come through this pandemic. I believe we only need targeted relief and a targeted approach. I don't think we should do massive new federal spending. We should stay targeted, stay focused on getting the economy open safely. Let's get this vaccine distributed. Let's use 2021 as a transition year. But let's go back to the kinds of long-term reforms in budgeting that we have to take on as Americans, because we've just seen a massive increase in our national debt as a result of fighting this virus that we didn't ask for. And I think the Congress has done a good job so far, but I think we can do a more targeted job in the next few months.
And then just finally, in the last minute or so that I have with you here, Thanksgiving plans. Are you doing the Thanksgiving thing, or are you doing the socially distant Thanksgiving? How does a congressman in these COVID times celebrate Thanksgiving?
We celebrate it with our family, and we will be in my dad's 94. He'll be with us, and our kids will be home, and we'll keep it basically to the family. But we're going to work in a little great Arkansas flyway duck hunting over the course
fun.
Of it, and that's outdoor. We're going to be super socially distant when we do that.
That's fun. Some duck hunting.
Absolutely.
See, I'm not doing it because I said to my folks, I said, Kev's not coming home for Turkey Day. No gobble gobble. You want to send me a Lamvilla pie? I'll take it. I'll eat it. But we're not doing it. For me personally, I want to get out of this year without getting COVID. I don't want anyone to get it. And but that's the, you know, but I think, you know, you're in Arkansas. You've got a lot more space down there. You following me?
Well, it's all about everybody needs to follow these CDC standards. Be careful, be focused, be tested,
stoic,
and be smart when they're celebrating Thanksgiving. I wish you a very happy turkey.
Thank you very much, Congressman, and I appreciate it. My best to you and your family as well. We'll catch up soon. Much more coming up next. Gobble, gobble. Kevin Cerulli, Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cerulli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Breaking news. Senator Chuck Grassley has coronavirus. The Republican from Iowa just tweeted out moments ago, quote, "I've tested positive for coronavirus. I'll be following my doctor's orders and CDC guidelines and continue to quarantine. I'm feeling good. We'll keep up on my work for the people of Iowa from home." He appreciates everyone's well wishes. He goes on to tweet and prayers and looks forward to resuming his normal schedule soon. Again, Senator Chuck Grassley has coronavirus. He has tweeted out that statement. I'm Kevin Cerulli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. It's time now for my favorite part of the program. What's on the panel's radar? And I feel like it's going to be a spicy radar. Spicy show. Luis Miranda, former DNC communications director and director of communications and politics at Alloy, which is a nonprofit tech startup for building better data and technology for progressives. And former Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Renacci, who represented Ohio's 16th congressional district between 2011 to 2019. Congressman, I'm going to start with you. What is on your radar?
Well, a lot of good things in Ohio, but before I say anything, I want to go back to my good friend, Arkansas Congressman French. He said something I thought was interesting, and you know how I hate our debts and deficits. He said, we got to get a bill passed, and then when we come back, we got to make better decisions with taxpayer money. Something to remember, better decisions. Were we making bad decisions now? Possibly, but let's talk about what's really on the radar. As you know, in Ohio, our Republican governor came out today and now has issued a curfew. So it's definitely has caused my radar screen to start blipping. It's a curfew now from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. But he also came out this week and said you cannot have Thanksgiving dinner with more than 10 people. You can cut the cake at your wedding ceremony and have the first dance, but you can't sit with your friends. You can have a drink at your wedding, but only if you're sitting. And by the way, if someone is doing anything wrong in your mind, you can call the new state hotline and have a friendly visit from the representative of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation to shut you down. I can tell you this is not going to end well. No one should have this kind of authority in a free society without legislative approval. Remember what I said. Legislative approval trumps everything, and people get mad at me when I say that, but I do believe the legislature has the power because the people give it the power. I'm not too sure executive branches have these kind of powers, but it'll be interesting. You're probably going to see a lot of things occurring in Ohio, and I can tell you that the governor, DeWine, is one of the few Republicans alongside many Democrat governors who are making some of these decisions. So it should be interesting.
Well, it is, because every state and every school district around the country, as you know, Jim, is having to deal with this. And so, you know, there is a clear divide, folks, in terms of how people feel the U.S. should flatten the curve or communities should flatten the curve. And people have differing opinions of it, you know, and this is not a uniquely American problem. This is happening all over the world, whether it's in Italy, whether it's in France, whether it's in the UK, Germany, cases in Europe, all countries in Europe, they're having to deal with this. And it's fascinating from a geopolitical sense, because so many of the debates that we are having here in the United States in a political level are also being had from the various progressive and conservative parties across Europe. And so I find it fascinating. And Jim, you know, I guess my follow-up to you, and that's a great one to have on your radar as Governor Mike DeWine has added these new restrictions across the state of Ohio as COVID-19 cases have spiked. What do your conservative colleagues in Ohio suggest the governor do in order to rein the virus in?
Well, look, remember that Governor DeWine was one of the first to step out there and do many things early on and got a lot of public attention nationally because of what he was doing. But yet, 6 months later, we have the same spiking that's going on in the states that did not do as much of an aggressive move. So that tells you one thing. Number two, and I think I've told you, my son's a emergency room physician in New York City at Mount Sinai, and he has finally said to me,
we thank him,
even though he's a very, very liberal thought process. He said at one time, we got to shut things down. Today, he will tell you, Dad, I don't care what you do. New studies are now showing that 60% of people are going to end up with this virus because it is that contagious. So what we need to do is, you know, wear masks, which I do, social distance, but you can't eliminate your life because you, as he said, 60% will, you know, I just heard about Senator Grassley, 60% will probably get this. So I think in the end, what we need to do, and this is what the conservatives in Ohio are saying, don't sit there and say that you're not going to be able to go out at 10 o'clock and you got to come in at 4 o'clock. And by the way, Puerto Rico's done that too, and their numbers are spiking. So like you said, we can look all over the world and see some of these things that are going on. In the end, I think you got to practice positive social distancing. I think you should wear a mask when you're in a crowd. That's my opinion. That's what some conservatives say. But in the end, you should only do what legislative authority gives you the authority to do.
It's fascinating. I mean, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I mean, these types of debates are going to be, it's going to be fascinating to see what the history books have to say about all this. All right, Lewis, what's on your radar?
Well, on my radar, it's actually a related topic, which is that Senate Republicans failed to advance the controversial nomination of Judy Shelton.
Judy Shelton, we talked about it earlier. Go ahead. We're talking about the Fed board. I'll give you the headline just to catch everybody up to speed. Judy Shelton's nomination to the Fed Reserve Board was blocked in the Senate earlier today. Go ahead.
And the big reason for it, in part, is because Chuck Grassley couldn't vote. And he couldn't vote because he's got coronavirus. And so you see that even as the president makes this last-ditch effort to make the most of his remaining days in the White House, he's shooting himself in the foot by the lack of and failure of leadership that he's had on coronavirus. That's just making it impossible for him. Of course, this nomination doesn't stand a better chance in a couple of weeks, you know, after the quarantine is over for him and Rick Scott. Since you also have Mark Kelly, the Democrat who just won in Arizona in that special election. coming in, and so you'll
I have
see
a, fun one.
a different count there.
I have a fun one because I feel like you know we gotta have a little bit of fun today. Am I right, Jim? Am I right, Lewis? Can we have a little bit
We're
of fun?
We're always having fun.
Okay, good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, the New York Times headline: Dolly Parton, singer, songwriter, pandemic savior. The Guardian: Dolly Parton partly funded Moderna COVID vaccine research. CNN: Dolly Parton helped fund Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine research. She really did. She donated $1 million to coronavirus research at Vanderbilt University. And now, more than 7 months later, it's been revealed that the legendary performer's donation helped fund the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Dolly Parton. You know, Jim Lewis, can we agree that Dolly Parton did something good for Moderna?
She's an American hero. She's an American hero. You know, she's actually done so much helping increase the literacy rate in her home state.
Tennessee.
She's an American hero.
Jim, do you like Dolly?
I do. And again, we have plenty of American heroes, and she's one of them. A lot of people have stepped up and done a lot of good things, including all these frontline healthcare workers who have really stepped into the mix.
I agree. Do we have Jolene, Reggie on the boards? Can we get some Jolene to take me out? Some Dolly Parton? All right, well, I want to thank everybody for listening. No Dolly on the way out. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes. Jolene, there it is. Jolene, let's just listen to... I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. Please don't take him just because you